The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. In our discussion of nematodes as an example of a group of organisms which really cause a great deal of difficulty for the evolutionist, I thought perhaps it would be helpful if we simply look at something of the variety of organisms that we find within the nematodes. I would like to make one comment in light of our finishing up a discussion that simply listed a number of the unique or unusual characteristics for nematodes. When we look at such things as the difference in energy metabolism, presence of only longitudinal muscles, no protean excretory organs, the fact that the organisms have a consistent number of cells and nuclei present, a constant number of those, and so on, all of those things simply are characteristics of a group unlike other groups of organisms. And the comment I would make at this point simply has to do with the idea that there is nothing that we know of in nature, presently or in the past, that could be the basis of forming these characteristics within a group of organisms which are so very different from one another. This is what natural selection is supposed to do, or use and disuse, or the other ideas of the evolutionary theories. But the fact is, there is nothing that could occur in an individual organism that would cause it to be different from its parents in order to produce this kind of unique collection of characteristics, as opposed to different kinds of organisms, even within a single group, very unusual different characteristics. And there simply is nothing that could affect either the somatic tissue or the genetic material in such a way that these characteristics could be brought into existence in a way that would be harmonized with the evolutionary views. Now let's look at some of the examples of the nematodes. Unless you have studied parasitology, or unless you've had some of these things, there really isn't any reason for you to be aware of the variety and the, to me, very interesting characteristics of some of the organisms. Undoubtedly, the most common roundworm from the standpoint of human infestation would be the human roundworm, Ascaris lumbricoides. There are other species of Ascaris, but this is by far the most common. The figures I read for the United States, particularly the southeastern United States, up to 64% of the population in certain areas. Obviously more than half. Worldwide, probably more than a billion people are infested with Ascaris. It is not a parasite that causes death normally. This would be very rare. And even deleterious conditions in the body are unusual. If there were large numbers of them, it is possible that they might cause perforated intestines, which can be serious and under certain circumstances lethal, but it's not something that is a crisis in a person's life, and for that reason might be ignored or might be of less interest than it might be otherwise. Now, there is a sexual dimorphism in Ascaris. The females are larger than the males. There is a little hook on the, say, tail end, the end of the worm away from the head of the organism. And it is a little hook that contains spicules, contains some other structures that are quite unique. But if you're trying to separate, sometimes you have a pile of worms lying on the table and somebody says, oh, this is male and that's female. How in the world did you know that? Well, it's really not hard in the case of these worms. The males will always be smaller, and they will always have that little hook on the bottom, which is an aid to the sexual reproduction. A single female is capable of laying up to 200,000 eggs per day. Unbelievable number. The worms, of course, live in the intestinal tract. These eggs are going to be ejected from the body with the fecal material in areas where there is not sanitary sewage disposal. The eggs are simply going to be deposited in the soil. If there is water present or moisture present and not excessive temperature, or if they're not in the sunshine, if they're in the shade, then the normal time of development from the egg to the embryonated larvae, about 2 weeks. And these larvae, if conditions are suitable, can live for a period of months, some would argue years, in the soil. Now, if a person is infected with these things, then there either has to be fecal contamination of some sort, or they must have ingested soil in which the eggs have occurred. If it's in the soil, then it's possible, certain areas of the world where they use human fecal material as fertilizer, it's not too difficult to see how you could have eggs on vegetables or plants that grow in such soil. In an area where the eggs are present in the soil, you have children playing. Children's hands get dirty, and they are not particularly fussy about sticking dirty fingers in their mouth. And so there can be a very simple way of children picking up these parasites. When the eggs are swallowed, these eggs, embryonated eggs, or the tiny larvae themselves, when they hatch, they are going to burrow through the intestinal wall and get into veins or the lymph system of the body, and are going to be carried through the heart to the lungs. Here, if they have not hatched, they will do so, climb up through the trachea to the pharynx, and then crawl back down the intestinal tract, where they will mature and will then be able to have sexual reproduction and produce more eggs. And this is essentially the life cycle. If there are large numbers, they can cause a very serious pneumonia-like condition, as you can imagine. This often is simply comes and goes without undue notice on the part of the individual. And they're back in the intestinal tract. There is also a parasite known as a hookworm. Necator americanus is the New World hookworm. Necator, the genus name, simply has to do with killer, although these are not usually deadly. The females, up to 11 millimeters. They are certainly visible, but they're not very big. Males, about 9 millimeters. They have plates on their mouths, which allow them to cut through the skin. One of the few parasites that has the ability to make its way through an unbroken skin. And they will simply get through the skin into the blood and again move around through the body. If there are large numbers, they can cause important anemia, although it requires a fair number to do that. And they will end up finally in the intestinal tract, and the eggs would be passed from the host there. In my opinion, probably the most important of the roundworm parasites is what is known as the trichina worm, Trichinella spiralis. These are worms that are found in humans, in rats, in pigs. A human becomes infected by eating meat that contains the encysted immature stages of the worm. Encysted here, E-N-C-Y-S-T-E-D. They will form little cysts in muscle tissue usually, although with trichina, they can be found in any part of the body, as we will talk about in a moment. They will form the cysts, and then people will eat meat that has not been cooked sufficiently to kill the worms. You say, well, what happens if they eat meat that has worms that have been sufficiently cooked. Well, in that case, you get a little extra protein with your hamburger or whatever you happen to be eating. Here, the worms, adult worms, are going to burrow into the mucosa of the small intestine. They'll enter through the skin, wander around through the body until they get to the intestinal tract, and that's where they're going to live. Then, the juveniles are simply, they're going to be crawling around through the body. Any place that has, I don't say through the body, they're in the circulatory system, but they're going to go any place where there is a large supply of blood. And apparently one of their preferable sites will be skeletal muscles, although they can be found in the heart, in other places. Now, they have the ability, by virtue of the variety of places they can be found in the body, if there are sufficient numbers, people can die of conditions that can be diagnosed for almost anything you want to talk about. TB, certain types of fever, heart trouble, strokes, etc. And I'm convinced, particularly in the United States, that there are many deaths that are caused by this parasite, which are never diagnosed in that way. Pinworms, fairly small. The eggs, in fact, are microscopic, fairly common. 30% of the children in the United States, 16% of the adults. The females will crawl out of the anus at night and lay eggs, and the process causes itching. And when children itch, they scratch. This means the eggs that they pick up are going back in their mouth again, and you have the reinfection. Very difficult to get rid of this particular parasite because of the smallness of the eggs. Here, there is a condition that is known as haploid diploidy. The males are haploid, have a single set of chromosomes. The females are diploid. This means they have two sets of chromosomes. The males can be formed by parthenogenesis, simply growth from a single cell. The females have to have an fertilized egg that they are going to be growing from. The filarial worms, particularly one they call elephantiasis, you have microfilaria that will reproduce in a lymph node, and then the lymph will begin to back up, and you'll have the swelling, particularly of legs or sometimes breasts or other parts of the body. A wide variety of worms in the same group, which again gets us to immense difficulties for the evolutionists to explain how you have all the different habits, life cycle structures in the worms. And the simple answer is simply that they are part of God's creation. And there really are no processes that would allow a consistent evolutionary basis for explaining these particular organisms.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.